Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Is the Savage Nation. The leading story is so shocking that you're not going to believe what I'm about to tell you. A Muslim went on a rampage in Seattle a while ago. He killed one Jewish woman. He shot five other Jewish women, all unarmed. And the liberal scum in Seattle and the verminous lawyers who should be tarred and feathered just got a mistrial in the case of a Muslim who clearly killed one woman and shot five others. This is America. This is the disgusting, scummy legal profession. This is the greatest outrage of the day on the Savage Nation. Now, how in the world two of these scumbag lawyers can deadlock a jury like this when the man, you have a smoking gun, you have dead women, you have a racist rant, and the man is free, free at last? How did this happen? The answer is Shakespeare had it right and Dick the Butcher. You got to read what Dick the Butcher said in Shakespeare to understand why this country could elect the people we've had elected, and why that a man, an unknown operative of the Chicago ward political system, could wind up being presented as though he's the second coming of Jesus. It's because of the lawyers. The lawyers are running this country into the ground. Judge declares mistrial in Huck case. Jury couldn't agree. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I rest my case. There's another story you got to hear about. For about 2 years now, I've been on the side of the U.S. Marines who were illegally charged with murder of the enemy, notably by Jack Murtha, the biggest grifter in Congress. Jack Murtha, Congressman Jack Murtha, Democrat from Pennsylvania, the biggest grifter in the history of the U.S. Congress, in my opinion, who went off at the mouth and made sure that these men would face court-martials, and as a result, was promoted by Nancy Pelosi to many, many high positions. Today, another Marine was found not guilty in the Haditha cover-up. There was no Haditha cover-up. There never was a Haditha cover-up. It was a result of a reporter from Time magazine, a long-standing anti-military, anti-American, anti-war reporter, the type that Obama would appoint to be the head of the Pentagon. This reporter, Tim McGurk, is why our men in Iraq are getting court-martialed, in my opinion. He should be tried for what he did. Murtha should be censored and tried for what he has done. There's only one man left in this Marine chain. That's a man who was not even in Haditha. That's Colonel Chesani, who many of you gave hundreds of thousands of dollars to, I mean collectively, for his defense. He's still on the hook. His life has been put on hold. He has five children. He served this country loyally for 14 or more years. And yet, because of this fat pig, Murtha, poor old Chesani is still facing a court-martial. It's astounding to me what the lawyers are doing to this country. So in Seattle, we have injustice because of verminous lawyers who are taught to lie, cheat, and steal in law school. In the Marines, we have verminous scum lawyers who don't have the guts to fight, but they put on the uniform just to persecute our fighting men. Wherever you turn, what you see are corrupt lawyers running America into the ground. On the right side of MichaelSavage.com, we have another story. Remember Tommy Thompson? Remember the former health chief, Tommy Thompson? The good old conservative boy, Tommy Thompson, under President Bush? The great Tommy Thompson, the ex-health boss, former health chief under President Bushy, is now cashing in on 9/11. See, he created a little company after he left public service. And then he did a little deal with his former boss in the Bush administration. Now he's making a good couple of million bucks a year. Good old Tommy Thompson, Republican. See, they all walk the walk and talk the talk, don't they, the conservatives? Like you know what they do. They're a bunch of frauds through and through. There never was a conservative in the Republican Party, with the exception of three or four southeastern senators who truly believe in the meaning of the word America. The rest of them are nothing but glorified lobbyists, in my opinion. So these are the stories that are really toasting me today. They're getting me very agitated. I have them up on michaelsavage.com. Here's another one that you have to hear because it's about John McCain. And the article, the editorial says, McCain challenges Obama, Savage challenges McCain. It was written by my producer, Beowulf, and it says, John McCain has challenged Barack Obama to 10 debates before the presidential election in November. And yet, over the past year, the Savage Nation has presented numerous challenges to John McCain to speak to the Savage Nation, to address his core constituency of independent conservatives, and consolidate working American citizens behind his campaign. McCain has consistently slipped away from doing so. According to McCain's bartenders, McCain has not had any time in his schedule to speak to Michael Savage. Time after time, the Savage Nation has been ignored or rebuffed by John McCain. By doing this, McCain is deserting the only people who can get him elected. McCain must abandon the liberals he is seeking and return to his conservative roots. He must and he can confront Barack Hussein Obama. But if McCain fails to face his own conservative base by not appearing on the Savage Nation, his loss in November will be assured, and America will fall into the hands of hard-left socialists once more. Why have you stopped caring about the McCain-Obama complex? In fact, if you search for pictures of Obama, there's a real stunner by a propagandist for Reuters where they created a halo, an actual halo around Obama's head. I swear to you, I'm not making it up. They created a halo for him. Why have you stopped caring about this election, or do you care more about it than ever? I would rather talk about wine, tomatoes, grapes, and garlic than McCain and Obama, frankly. In fact, I got an email last night from a regular listener, which I'm looking for. It's gotten sucked up here into the vacuum called the stack, and here it is. See, I don't lose a thing. Hi, Michael Savage. My husband and I really enjoy it when you talk about dogs, herbs, recipes, and food. Anything but politics. Could you make some comments on red wine and the recent reports about its health benefits? I'm curious to know your opinion about it, even though I've heard you mention it in the past. If you could write more on the topic and let us know just how we can benefit or what is too much or too little to drink. I think with all of your extensive knowledge and education in health, I trust your judgment more than most in the media. Thank you very much. It comes from Sandy, a fan. Well, let me just direct you to start with. I don't want to go into that right now. Bottom left of michaelsavage.com, I found a superb article that we linked up from the Linus Pauling Institute because I knew this to be true. I just wanted the data. We know there are health benefits of red wine, you know, the French paradox and all of that. But many of you don't drink, and rightly so. Well, guess what? You can get the same benefits from red grapes and certain grape juice and some berries, interestingly. You do not have to drink red wine to get the chemical compound that is alleged to have these health benefits. I mean, if you want to drink red wine, go ahead. But you're talking about a certain compound in the red wine, resveratrol, which is also found underneath the skin of the grape in red grapes. And so there it is. You know, you've got to see the whole story. I mean, there are interests at stake here. There are financial interests at stake. But this polyphenola compound is found in grapes for sure, red wine for sure, but it's also found in purple grape juice. It's found in berries. It's found in peanuts. And it's important that you understand this, that you don't have to drink wine in order to get the resveratrol, which is a wonderful compound. One caution on this. I would not take resveratrol supplements in any manner. Because the resveratrol supplements that are being touted by the vitamin industry generally come from, you guessed it, China, primarily from the root of Polygonum cuspidatum. And it's known in Chinese medicine as Huzhong or Kojo Kan. I would not trust any such substance from China, given China's terrible track record on toxins, not only in pet food, but toxins in medical, in pharmaceuticals, toxins in so many of our products. As you well know, there are no standards whatsoever in China right now. So again, to go back to it, if you want, why don't you just get organic red grape juice, as I do? Now, we'll talk about the mistrial in Seattle. Here we have a Muslim, says, I want to kill Jews, gets into the Seattle Jewish Center, kills one Jewish woman, shoots five other Jewish women. Today, the verminous left-wing scum lawyers in Seattle sprung them in a mistrial. We have another couple of cases that I've mentioned, and we're going to discuss all of them right here on the one and only Savage Nation, 1-800-449-8255. Let me repeat that number. Let me repeat that number for those of you who don't know how to write it down. 1-800-449-8255. If you'd like to see the total content of this wonderful antioxidant in wine and food and compare it for yourself, you'll have to go to michaelsavage.com and download the article, and you'll see the amount of resveratrol in a 5-ounce glass of wine, a 5-ounce glass of red wine, a 5-ounce glass of white wine, a 5-ounce glass of rosé wine, and how much is found in red grape juice. I'll be right back. So we've been put through the ringer with Hillary's run for the presidency, you know, the nomination on her party. And you have to ask yourself a question. For a year now, she has not been functioning as a senator for the state of New York. And yet New York has gone along just as it's gone along without her. It makes you wonder, what do senators do? Do you think this country would stop running if the entire Senate resigned? I personally don't think we need any of them. They're just glorified lobbyists who work strictly for a special interest. They don't do the people's business whatsoever. I mean, here's New York State. Here's Hillary Clinton. She hasn't been there for a year. And the state's still running. What do they need her for? What do you need the rest of them for? It's a government unto itself, damn it. Don't you understand the whole federal government is corrupt? They work on their own, for themselves, by themselves. When have they done the people's business? They do their own business. What do they do for you lately? You ever try to call your local senator or congressman and seen what's happened? Here in California, we don't have a U.S. senator. We have two interlopers. We have two out-of-towners pretending to be Californians who represent California when they're not even here most of the time. You see, it's all coming out in the wash, what senators really are. They're glorified lobbyists. If you have enough cash, you'll get through the door. Period, end of story. And that's why this country is broken, and I don't know that it can ever be fixed. You have a two-party system that's having a party at the expense of the nation. That's why we have contaminated pet food, contaminated drugs, contaminated morals, contaminated schools, contaminated borders, contaminated language, contaminated culture, because nobody is watching the store. And when we stand up for any of these things, we get shot down and taken down. We get shot down and taken down. You understand that? Al in New York, you're up on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, Dr. Savage, I'm a little confused about this Barack Obama and the Jewish vote. I was reading in the editorial in the Post today that said, despite Barack's willingness to meet with third world dictators, including Iran, who wants to wipe Israel off the map, the majority of the Jewish vote is going to go to Barack. I don't understand.
Well, that's because they think he's a Lanceman. Listen, nobody's ever said that Jews are intelligent. Where have you read that? That liberal Jews are intelligent? Where'd you get that idea? They have no intelligence for their own survival, in my opinion.
Now,
well, he did put on an Israeli pin today, I think. When he spoke to AIPAC yesterday, he put on an Israeli pin. He became more hardliner than Ariel Sharon in his heyday. So I guess that Barack Obama disproves Abraham Lincoln's statement that you can't fool all of the people all of the time. At least when it comes to New York and West Palm Beach. Thanks for the call. In New York or West Palm Beach, you can fool all of the people all of the time. New York, Bonnie, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yes, I've been watching the trial on True TV, the Seattle trial. Some information you might have missed. The person who was killed and who died, she was not Jewish. She was a convert to Judaism. One of the other people wasn't Jewish. And my third point about this trial...
Wait a minute. You mean but because they weren't Jewish? Even though he killed him, it doesn't matter?
No, it does matter. I'm saying maybe he thought he went in there to kill all Jews, but a couple of people were Christians. So he
But it's irrelevant whether they were Jewish or Christian. The Muslim killed one woman unarmed and shot five other women. And yet the lawyers got him a mistrial. That's the issue. Not what their religion was.
No, but I'm saying maybe he thought he was going in there to kill all Jewish people. And unfortunately, a couple Christians.
Well, he was. He said he was. So it's a federal civil rights case. But when has the federal government ever moved in on a civil rights case unless it was a blonde, blue-eyed Christian falsely accused of something?
And in addition, we got to get rid of...
Get off my show. I don't even want to talk to you. You're getting me mad. And I know you're not getting... I'm just angry today. My ire is up. And I'm not even Irish. And my ire is up. Play some Irish music for me right now, for God's sakes. Play some Irish music like Bagpipe or Danny Boy or whatever. Every time McCain speaks, he's getting Danny Boy for me. McCain looks like a flat-footed detective in an old, in like a New York PD, NYPD movie. Why is he running? He's a fall guy for the whole... Get it. Oh, that's enough already. It's enough already. People say to me, oh, you should support McCain. He's good on taxes. How do you know what he's good on? What's McCain? Well, I just lost my connection. I just heard it pop in the ISDN line. I'm still live. Well, that's a plus. Somebody up there likes me. San Francisco, Lee, you're on the Savage Nation topic. Please go ahead. What's on your mind?
Yeah, how you doing, Mike? I just wanted to know, Mike, if we'd be able to wake McCain up at 3 o'clock in the morning. He looks a little tired at his press conferences. And
I tell you the truth. They show a picture of him side by side with Obama. Obama has beautiful white teeth. McCain has yellow teeth. Now, if his own dentist is sabotaging him, what do you think his campaign manager might be doing?
Yeah.
Can he use teeth whiteners? They're all over the internet. He could put them on at night on his airplane while he's dozing off and get clean white teeth by the morning. I never saw anyone run for office with yellow teeth like this, Lee. Have you?
Not really. I just was wondering maybe he could use...
Or play the Irish music again. Maybe he needs some Irish spring on his toothbrush. Johnny Milad, there's a Buick dealership in Mongolia waiting for you. You and Cindy, Mongolia, think of the future. Yaks, yak milk, no allergies. The high plains, the high mountains of Mongolia. A Buick dealership made in China.
Savage.
Seems as though the Republican Party has completely abandoned the election altogether. They're all backing Obama. I'm surprised that McCain hasn't come out and endorsed Obama yet. I'm surprised McCain hasn't endorsed Obama the way he's been behaving. I've never seen anything quite like this. The Washington Times, for example, allegedly a conservative newspaper, allegedly, today writes an editorial glowing about Obama and how he gives us all hope, without any mention of the fact that Obama is on record as being the most liberal amongst liberals in the U.S. Senate. The most liberal. So you say, all right, he gives us hope, but let's not forget that he is the most liberal of all senators. They didn't even say that. They're lining up, every last one of them, behind this unknown quantity. Grand Rapids, Charles, you're on the Savage Nation.
Hey, Mike, how are you doing today? Longtime listener, love your show. My question to you is, I don't understand when this world, I mean, because if our forefathers of this country was to wake up, they would probably roll in their graves. I guess my question is, when do you think this all, when did the start of this twisting of our Declaration of Independence stuff start happening? When did this take place?
When Eve took a bite of the apple in the Garden of Eden. Eve was the first liberal, you see, and as a result of that, things have never been the same.
Yeah, I agree. I can't...
See, God said to Adam, everything was fine when Adam was here alone. He said, all right, take your rib out, and from the rib we'll make a woman. And ever since then, the woman has been ribbing the man. Thanks for the call. Speaking of ribbing the man, here's Bob Dylan, who is saying Barack Obama is changing America. Now, I have nothing against Bob Dylan. You know, he's a 67-year-old, highly talented musician. He's done some incredible songs. How could you not love Bob Dylan? But they stop him in Denmark for this interview in a hotel during a tour of Scandinavia. And he says Barack Obama is the great hope for America. So you read what people say about that. Alice in Staten Island writes and says, gee, I thought Dylan was a smart guy, but it looks as if he's just as dumb as the rest of the mesmerized people who think Obama is the second coming. Everything the guy has said was said by McGovern, Mondale, and Dukakis, but because he's black, he symbolizes change. What a joke. What a joke. And that summarizes it. I mean, if you want McGovern, and you want Mondale, and you want Dukakis, and you want Kucinich, and a little Karl Marx thrown in with a little Islamo flavor, well, you've got the candidate now with a little Nation of Islam in there. Because there's no question that the church he attended for 20 years is a cousin, a Christian cousin to the Nation of Islam. So there it is. I don't know how you cannot see this. I believe it's brainwashing. It's brainwashing. You know, Leni Riefenstahl, Hitler's propaganda minister, Goebbels, wrote that if you tell a big lie often enough, it will become the truth. And so if you continuously for over a year show Obama with a halo around him, show him in the most positive portraits and write about him glowingly every day in your newspapers and on television, eventually the masses will start to believe he is a dream rather than a human being. And that's where we are today. The media wants him elected. No one cares about what happened in Seattle. I mean, what am I, the only? Am I the last angry man on earth? How could you not be mad about this? A Muslim goes into a Seattle community center, which happens to be Jewish, with a loaded gun. He shoots one woman to death. He injures five others, and a jury, so-called jury, is tricked by the judges in Seattle, and it's a mistrial. This is a federal civil rights case if ever there was one. If ever there was a need for the Justice Department, it's today. They should step in immediately and say, we're going to try him on a civil rights charge because he made anti-Semitic comments while he was shooting the women. But as you well know, it's George Bush. It's George Bush and George Bush Prime. Seattle, Washington, Mike, what do you think about the case up in Seattle? Go ahead, please.
Yes, sir. I'm as upset as you are. I can't believe it, except that the insanity plea is insanity at the courts.
No, I would blame those two lawyers. In fact, if you look at the picture that we got from the Seattle Times up on michaelsavage.com, one of the lawyers who's wearing glasses, you could see him fighting back a giant grin just as the mistrial is declared. Do you know what they told the jury? That because he was fat, the Muslim shooter was fat, he had an inferiority complex. That's why he did it, because he was fat and a Muslim and short. Would you believe this? They introduced this into the trial?
They also said he had a hard childhood, very hard childhood.
Well, I'm sure Hitler had a tough childhood and only one testicle. I guess you have to write off what he did in history. You know, I have said this 1,000 times if I've said it once. I don't care about their childhood. I care about the act the man might perform, good or bad, not what his childhood was. That's never an excuse. What kind of society we live in? Because somebody looked at you wrong, you're able to shoot them? No, this is a case, the Hack trial, that demands a federal intervention immediately. Immediate federal civil rights trial, because this was a violation of civil rights here. But, as I say, they're busy persecuting Marines, and there's no reason for them to get involved in this one. New Jersey. Andrew, welcome. You're on the Savage Nation.
Michael, how are you? Can you hear me?
Well, I have to answer that.
I'm a very moderate Democrat that I really enjoy listening to you. I was a Hillary supporter, and when I try to explain to people that I will not vote for this Obama, I try.
Breaking up. Sorry, he was getting to a good point. He's a liberal Democrat. He says when he tells people why he's not going to vote for Obama, I know what he was going to say, they probably freeze up on him and look hypnotic and angry like he's insane. I see this look all over the Bay Area. I sometimes do this to get their goat and see what happens. I pick up my cell phone and make believe I'm calling somebody, and I say the most terrible things about Obama if I'm in a crowded area full of brainwashed liberals, just to see what reaction I'll get, because most of them are on drugs. They're either legal or illegal, and they're walking around in a fog like a psychosis. So I start saying, did you know Obama's associated with the Nation of Islam? Do you know his preacher is an anti-American white hater? You should see the reactions I get from some of these psycho liberals. You can't believe it. It's as though I committed a crime. It's as though they want the police to come and arrest me. Play some Irish music for me, please. I just had an what did I just drink here that was so good? I just had an espresso with a piece of lemon in it. Two cultures mixed together there. The espresso is from our Arab friends. Turn it off. Because Cafe Arabica, thank God, was introduced to the world by the Arabs who discovered the bean in Ethiopia. Thank God for that. And the lemon, of course, I was once an ethnobotanist. The lemon came from which culture? I don't know. But I love the way the Italians put the lemon in the espresso. It's very clever. Not only does it counter some of the, strangely enough, the acidity of the coffee is countered by the acidity of the lemon. And by the pH of the lemon changes the type of acidity of the coffee. And the vitamin C from the lemon, of course, counteracts some of the negatives of coffee, although most things about coffee are positive. All of this in a coffee cup. It's wonderful to have a mind that's inquisitive. I was speaking to a family member today who said to me, how come you're so talkative when the rest of the family is not? You know what? I thought back on it. I was always a talkative kid. My father used to puzzle over it. In fact, he used to mutter to himself and others. He would say, this kid talks and talks and talks and talks. Little did he know that he had a talk show host in the making. He thought that it was odd that I was such a talker. And, of course, the older men in the neighborhood used to sit in the way men used to do in that neighborhood. They would line up the boys psychologically, and they'd say, well, Bobby would be a good doctor. Sammy would be a good stockbroker. This one would be me, they said I would have been a good lawyer. Oh, thank God I didn't listen to them. I'd be on the other side of the bar. I have nothing against all lawyers. My lawyers are great. Your lawyers are terrible, is how it goes. But to see lawyers who would take a man who committed murder with a smoking gun and not only represent him, but twist the law in such a way and confuse the jury in such a way. And I know what you lawyers are going to say when you call. You know you're guilty, so don't even bother. You know what you're made of. I've heard it all from all of you. And none of it holds for me, none of it. When you say, well, a client is entitled to the best defense, that's rubbish. A guilty client is not entitled to the best defense. Not when there's a smoking gun and a dead woman and five maimed women. Particularly if it was your wife or your daughters. Don't tell me you would say the same thing, you liars, you. You know how to twist the morons on the juries because you've rigged the jury system, haven't you? You've created a system where sane people can hardly get on a jury. You've created even jury consultants where they weed out anybody with an intelligence above 99 on a jury unless they can trick you into thinking they're stupid. What kind of jury system is this? What kind of jury system is it that you'd throw out anybody with independent mind? We'd be better off with a star chamber in this case. Dallas, Texas, Mark, you on the Savage Nation.
Mike, I just want to say about this disgusting verdict in Seattle. I believe that probably the best thing to do is, rather than go federal, is to try him again. Because if they go with the federal, the most you can get a civil rights violation is 10 years. And this scumbag deserves a heck of a lot more. And he deserves a death. This type of terrorist running around a country.
He's not a terrorist. He's a poor, misunderstood, short, fat Muslim who had a bad self-esteem day. He had bad self-esteem, so he figured he would get a gun, calculate how to get into the Jewish center, which was premeditation, and then go around one after the other, desk after desk, and shoot innocent women as they scream for their lives. You know that some women had to jump out of windows to save their lives? Do you know that?
Sure, I remember that. And I'll tell you something else. The time will come when we're going to have to start large...
Let's hold it right there. We don't do that on radio. You understand why. The time came a long time ago, Mark, and nothing happened. The country has been deballed effectively. After 16 years of Clinton Bush, the testosterone in America has been put into the extreme fighting ring. That's the only place it's allowed. Yourself like a man, you wind up probably arrested.
Well,
thanks for the call. What can I say about this? Nothing. Who should McCain's vice president be? Let's talk about let's get to a paint by numbers radio show. Who should be McCain's VP? How about Tommy Thompson? Ex-health boss, but now cashing in on 9/11. He's the former governor of Wisconsin. He'd be a perfect vice president. Who else would be a perfect vice presidential running mate for John McCain? Let's see. usually they run, if it's Obama should pick, is going to pick someone who's slightly Democrat, a conservative Democrat, whoever that might be. I don't know who could that be. No one knows any. You know, some kind of war hawk, military Democrat would be perfect for him let's say, triangulate McCain's war record. So McCain, being a liberal, in order to shore up the conservative base, has to pick a conservative, but he won't do it. McCain will probably pick a liberal to run with him, and that'll doom his campaign even further. The Yellow Teeth, I don't know. It's beyond. Do you have the Yellow Rose of Texas song for me when we come back? I'll be right back. Savage.
I even suggested we travel to them together on the same plane. Probably help out on energy savings. You know, and given our expenses, I know my campaign would agree to it.
Why can't I clean the stains off my dental plates with toothpaste?
Because regular toothpaste is too mild for dentures. Regular toothpaste must be mild enough for use inside the mouth on tender gums and teeth like hers. But now there's a toothpaste made especially for denture wearers. New DentuCream, the only toothpaste powerful enough for dentures.
Yeah, this goes out to you, Johnny. So now McCain is joking that he and Obama should travel together to save energy. That's his idea of a campaign. It's incomprehensible. You know, I'm going to rename the show the Nihilist Nation if this keeps up. It will no longer be the Savage Nation. It may become the Nihilist Nation. And it's not because Nietzsche was my great-grandfather at all. It has nothing to do with the fact that he wasn't. It's the fact that nihilism may be the only alternative to what Bush has done to this country and to the conservative movement. Now, Dick the Butcher, as you well know, was a character in one of Shakespeare's plays, and he made some horrible comments about lawyers. There's an article we got from the New York Post that I linked up on michaelsavage.com that you have to see. A leading lower Manhattan woman's rights lawyer watched porn at his desk, discussed his pierced genitalia, and wears a slave collar at work as part of his sadomasochistic relationship with his girlfriend, a shocking sex harassment suit alleges. Jack Tuckner, whose law firm says it's, quote, dedicated to the empowerment of women in the workplace, close quote, is a self-described, quote, testosterone-poisoned attorney with a penchant for bondage, who demeaned all of the women who worked for him, close quote, says the suit. It was filed yesterday in Manhattan Supreme Court by former office manager Lisa Brockington. Brockington, age 40, told the Post that Tuckner hired her at Tuckner, Sipsa, Weinstock, and Sipsa. Let me read that again. Hired her at his firm, Tuckner, Sipsa, Weinstock, and Sipsa, after representing her in a prior job discrimination suit. But she said, quote, he's really a, quote, chauvinist masquerading as a woman's advocate, she said. Oh, the fox in the chicken coop? I'm shocked. I'm shocked. Are you surprised that such a charge would be made against a man who was so good to women? I don't know if it's true or not, but Tuckner's lawyer, David Berlin, said of Brockington's suit, quote, there is absolutely no truth to the allegations, and these irrational and untrue charges are a reflection of the person bringing the charges. Well, as far as I'm concerned, all of these lawsuits are irrational, and all of the lawyers who represent these lawsuits are irrational. It's just a product of a broken legal system. That's my opinion, and I approve of my monologue. 1-800-449-8255. Steve in New Jersey, welcome to the Savage Nation. What's on your mind? Go ahead.
Hey, I just wanted to tell you, Michael, I was in this store in Pennsylvania. I was cold, so I went in there to get a sweatshirt. And there are these people talking about how the kids shouldn't be forced to say the Pledge of Allegiance. And, you know, I kept my mouth shut, whatever. They left the store. And the owner of the store, I guess he was the owner, he's behind the said thing, said, can you believe they're talking about they don't want the kids to say the Pledge of Allegiance? And I was like, well, what are you going to do? Liberalism's a mental disease. And he was like, oh, you listen to Savage Nation? I was like, yeah, I love Michael Savage. I listen to him all the time. And he was like, we talked for like a minute about some things. Like, I was like, what do I owe you for this shirt? He's like, just take the shirt. And I was like, really? He's like, yeah, we got to stick together.
Oh, that's a great story, Steve. What, was it a small store in Pennsylvania?
Yeah, it was a little store in Pennsylvania. He must have lived above it, it looked like. And it was a colonial-type thing. And, yeah, it's like I'm in some sort of club here.
It's amazing how deeply connected the Savage Nation is in this country, but it's a silenced audience, Steve. It's an unacknowledged giant that will determine the outcome of the next election, either by voting for McCain or not voting at all. The future of America hangs in the balance like a loose tooth. But McCain refuses to come forward and face this audience. He'd rather debate Obama than not debate me, but even talk to you. Think about that one. What is he hiding, Steve? Let's clear the air. What is it that McCain's afraid on this show? What do you think?
McCain, well, I know exactly what he's afraid of. He's afraid of being exposed as the phony politician that he is, basically. And that's what will happen. They're all the same, pretty much. He doesn't want to come off as looking the same. He is the same. And it really, listening to you, I just want to run up to a mountain and scream because it's just, you're so right. There's really nothing you can do about it. I mean, you could, but that's what I wanted to ask you. What do you think I should do? It's one or two options. I can either fully put my energy into getting involved and trying to do something, or I can ignore it completely, just become a bystander and try to just laugh about it. Which one should I do?
Well, in the past, I've been an activist. I would say the answer right now is to take issues on that are critical to the survival of America, as we did with the Dubai ports deal, as we did with the illegal amnesty bill, as we're going to have to do with the homosexual marriage assault upon the family. There are issues we're going to have to devote ourselves to. And I say, forget the politicians. They're all worthless and unreliable. We have to take the issues on at the ballot box. It's the last semblance of democracy that we have in this country, which is the ballot box, which is the special elections. And they're trying to eliminate them. Would you believe it? The homosexual mafia is now working not only to force gay marriage down the throats of the people, they're actually trying to eliminate in California these kinds of initiatives. They want the initiative process destroyed, Steve, because the one thing they can't have is democracy. And it's the same in every state of the union. True democracy is the only thing standing between us and true tyranny. So I say take them on issue by issue. Issue by issue. Forget the politicians. They're not your friend. Who should McCain choose as a vice presidential candidate? Who?
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
My friends, good evening. This is indeed a change election. I commend both Senators Obama and Clinton. Senator Obama, my friends, has impressed many Americans. Senator Clinton, my friends, has earned great respect. It's between the right change and the wrong change and make the future better than the past. The direction of this country is going to change. My friends, rise of the global economy. Change what must be changed. Healthcare, energy, the environment. And going forward and going backward. And that's not change we can believe. Changed healthcare, changed energy, changed the environment. My friends, the wrong change, 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 change. Thank you, thank you.
There's a yellow rose in Texas that I am gonna see. Nobody else could miss her. Not half as much as me. She cried so when I left her. It like to broke my heart.
Can't I clean the stains off my dental plates with toothpaste?
Because regular toothpaste is too mild for dentures. Regular toothpaste must be mild enough for use inside the mouth on tender gums and teeth like hers.
There's a yellow rose in Texas that I am gonna see.
I have to resort to the slapstick to survive another day of this. How they can take a radical leftist like Obama, paint halos around them, and have masses of people throwing themselves off emotional cliffs, believing he's the Messiah. And on the other hand, take a used-up hack with an old briefcase and recycle this guy and make believe he's something new and stands for change is a product of our destroyed government media complex. So here we are. Here we are, the nihilist nation. Here's an article for you that should attract those of you who are Catholic or those of you who are not Catholic. Anyone who believes in religion should be very careful in your reaction to what I'm about to read to you from a conservative news service. Art school displays painting of crucifix in man's posterior. A major New York art school is displaying sexually explicit paintings that depict a crucifix in a man's rectum and rosaries with male sex organs, according to the Catholic League. One painting shows a man with his pants pulled down and a crucifix extending from his rectum. Under the painting, it says, El día que me converti católico, which means the day I became a Catholic. Now, we know there are sick people in the art world. In fact, most people in the art world are sick, particularly at Cooper Union. Cooper Union has long been a left-wing university, if you want to call it that. It's not really a university. It's a school with degenerate druggies who can smear up a painting, get a scholarship to go and have sex, drugs, and rock and roll for a couple of years until they go into rehab and then eventually die of an overdose. But, you know, the problem here is not so much that another degenerate so-called artist has debased Catholicism, because it's happened before. The problem is that the Catholic religion has become so pacifist. And I believe that the Catholics should call upon their friends in the Muslim world for the proper reaction. You see, this is not painting Muhammad with a ticking time bomb in his turban. This is something more fundamentally more grotesque. It's attacking the religion of Catholicism itself rather than a prophet of Catholicism. It's attacking the religion itself. It's making a mockery of the church and the religion. And why 1,000 angry Catholics are not outside that university with blood in their eyes is a product of the debasement of the religion itself by liberalism. Catholicism was once a vigorous, masculine religion. Today it's become something other than that. And you have to learn, as do the Jews, from your Muslim friends, how to defend what you believe in. Right now, Catholics apparently don't care enough about their own religion. I know that the Catholic League does, and I've had my differences with the Catholic League, believe me. Bill Donahue once attacked me viciously because I dare stand up to Cardinal Phoney here in Los Angeles because of Cardinal Phoney's stance on illegal aliens, where I once said that the only reason the Catholic Church is behind illegal aliens is because they got to fill up the pews with as many live bodies as they can get their hands on. I was right. He was wrong. But when it comes to degenerates attacking a religion, I think we can all agree it has no place in a university or a school or in an art class. And to call this art is the real disgrace. 1-800-449-8255. Don't call me on this topic. I've said it all. There's nothing else you could say. Nothing whatsoever. What can you say? There are so many other important stories. Here's another one that I dug up from the Boston Globe, put it on michaelsavage.com. Ultra-liberal senator faces list of sexual assault allegations. Now, the important part of this is that he's an ultra-liberal state senator, James Marzilli Jr. We don't know if he's guilty, but here's what happened. It came out today. The picture is worth 1,000 words. Go to my website and see him. State Senator J. James Marzilli Jr., arraigned yesterday on charges that he tried to grope a woman and harass another on busy streets in downtown Lowell, Massachusetts, faces further investigation as more women came forward with accusations of inappropriate sexual contact. Now, I won't read the whole story, but on Tuesday afternoon, the veteran lawmaker, an ultra-liberal, by the way, fled police who tried to question him, causing cars to swerve out of his way and pedestrians to scramble as he darted through the city streets. Senator Marzilli was arrested in a parking garage where he was cut off by police cruisers chasing him. After officers threatened him with pepper spray to make him submit to handcuffs, according to police report, he broke into tears and cried that his life was over. Friends and political allies were shocked at the apparent unraveling of a career that had taken Marzilli from the trenches of political organizing in the 80s to the state house in the 90s and the state senate last year. A self-described, here it comes, ultra-liberal, Marzilli has been a darling of unions, environmental groups, and social service organizations whose causes he championed. Now, let me pause right here. How many times have I told you that uber liberalism is usually hiding either sexual deviancy, psychological damage, or other abnormalities in the individual who embraces such a political belief system when we know it is psychologically harmful? Ultra-liberalism is harmful to the individual and to the nation as a whole. It's one thing to be a Democrat. It's another thing to be an ultra-liberal. Just as it's one thing to be a conservative and another thing to be a Nazi. The ultra-liberals, who they call progressives, are the equivalent of the Nazis on the right band of the spectrum. But since the Nazis in America have absolutely no political power, as they should not have, you've got to be aware of the fact that the other side of the spectrum has tremendous power, and they're equally as dangerous, because in other countries and in other times, they ushered in Adolf Hitler, who was a socialist. Never forget that. National Socialism, anyone? That's what the acronym Nazi stands for. National Socialism, anyone? National Socialism, anyone? That's who Hitler was, a socialist. Chicago, Illinois. Eric, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi, Michael. I'm a new listener. Thanks for taking my call. My question is, what do you think motivates Senator Obama to be president?
Self-aggrandizement, like all politicians. He's just a, another politician. He doesn't have any desire to do anything good for anybody or anything bad for anybody, but he's oriented toward the extremes of the left. If you look at his voting record, if you look at the friends he associates with, although he's just another self-aggrandizing politician, his orientation is very dangerous for the nation. That's all. I mean, what else can I say about him? If you look at who he knew in Hawaii when he was at Punahou High School, when he was a mere lad, when he was sitting at the feet of some radical far-left bagmen in the Democrat Party, I mean, there's one in particular. There's a congressman from Hawaii who was his mentor, who is a well-known anti-Semite, a well-known America hater, a well-known police hater, a well-known military hater, who taught Obama an awful lot of what Obama believes. In fact, he recently boasted about his influence over Obama. You don't have to go too far to find out who I'm talking about, nor do you have to go too far to find out what the voting record is of this anti-Semite congressman in Hawaii. 1-800-449-8255, phone number. New York, Lou, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yes, Michael. What I would like to know is, how come during the entire campaign, not once was this brought up? Cindy McCain is a former drug addict. She falsified documents to get drugs. Then she stole drugs, and she got off with a slap on the wrist.
Now, wait a minute. Hold on. Slow down. What do you mean by what kind of drugs?
Well, supposedly they were painkillers.
Mm-hmm.
That's what.
Okay, so for that reason, what, John McCain should be disqualified because his wife was addicted to painkillers?
Why it wasn't brought up?
Well, you're bringing it up. You're smearing him. You're doing a good job of smearing Cindy McCain, who, as far as I'm concerned, is a first-class lady.
Well, I don't know. This is all I know about her. I mean,
that's all you know about her. That's all you know about her. You know nothing about her other than the fact that she was addicted to painkillers. I mean, Betty Ford was addicted to painkillers. How come you don't talk about that?
Yes, but she.
So you're saying that any candidate whose mate had a problem with a prescription drug should not be qualified to be a congressman, senator, or president?
No. He's perfectly qualified to run for the presidency. It's just that I'm surprised that this subject was never brought up.
The reason it was not brought up is because people don't have the same level of contempt for themselves as you do. People don't have the same low-class view of the world as you do. Thank you, Lou. I appreciate it. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Wait a minute, McCain, I'm just thinking about who he should pick for the vice presidential slot. Why not Al Sharpton or Jesse Jackson? That way he could triangulate Obama supporters and show that he's really a nice guy. And as you well know, Al Sharpton, although we don't know where he got his reverend credentials from, is now an expert on global warming. Apparently, he was working for a degree sometime overnight, and he was hired by Al Gore to be a spokesman for global warming. So that qualifies him as a scientist as well. So Al Sharpton would be a perfect running mate for John McCain. On a lighter note, this morning I got a very funny email from a friend, and it was about – I'm going to read it to you. I'm telling you what – but it comes from a book, which I'll give you the name of in a minute. I want to find it, though. You got to give me a minute because I didn't plan on doing this. I have to go to my emails now. And if I can find it, I'll read it to you. If not, I won't. But it's so funny, it's worth doing. And it's called I can't find it. Forget about it. I can't find it. That's all. I thought I had it, and I don't have it. It was very, very funny. Here it is. Got it. I got it. It's called The Sayings of a Jewish Buddhist. And when I got it, I started to laugh because it lightened things up. Here it is. If there is no self, whose arthritis is this? Be here now. Be someplace else later. Is that so complicated? Drink tea and nourish life. With the first sip, joy. With the second sip, satisfaction. With the third sip, peace. With the fourth, a Danish. Wherever you go, there you are. Your luggage is another story. Accept misfortune as a blessing. Do not wish for perfect health or a life without problems. What would you talk about? The journey of 1,000 miles begins with a single oi. There is no escaping karma. In a previous life, you never called, you never wrote, you never visited. And whose fault was that? Zen is not easy. It takes effort to attain nothingness. And then what do you have? Nothing. The Tao does not speak. The Tao does not blame. The Tao does not take sides. The Tao has no expectations. The Tao demands nothing of others. The Tao is not Jewish. Listen, breathe in, breathe out, breathe in, breathe out. Forget this, and attaining enlightenment will be the least of your problems. Let your mind be as a floating cloud. Let your stillness be as a wooded glen. And sit up straight. You'll never meet the Buddha with such rounded shoulders. Deep inside you are 10,000 flowers. Each flower blossoms 10,000 times, and each blossom has 10,000 petals. You might want to see a specialist. Be aware of your body. Be aware of your perceptions. Keep in mind that not every physical sensation is a symptom of a terminal illness. It's hilariously funny. I sent it to some people. Now, we found out where it came from. It was going around the internet, and where is it from? I don't know where it's from. It just came to me. It's actually on the – I'm going to give the guy a plug now. Here it is. You can get it from Amazon. I don't know the guy, but I want to give credit where credit is due. It's called Zen Judaism for You. Zen Judaism for You, A Little Enlightenment by David M. Bader. So he's going to get a huge plug. He'll sell thousands of books, and you know what? I'm a nice guy. Here's the last one. It's copyrighted. If you wish to know the way, don't ask for directions. Argue. It's funny. Lighten up. Lighten up. The Savage Nation, 1-800-449-8255. What do you want to talk about? San Francisco, Mark, you're on The Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hey, I will deliver California to McCain if he just considers my VP picks.
Go ahead.
Darfur. Anybody from Darfur? Newt Gingrich's daughter? Or one of the four Supreme Court justices that voted for gay marriage? He'll win in a landslide.
I'll let that go. I can't even comment. What do you want to talk about? Let's go to Chicago. Kirk, you're up next on The Savage Nation.
Hey, Dr. Savage. Hey, you know, it's just about that look, that car going after McCain's wife. I want to give you my VP pick, but you know, that guy obviously has no medical background making comments like that. Want to expose that, you know. Anyway, yeah, my pick, I think it has to be done carefully. And what I would do is I would fill up the Army football stadium with the next class of recruits. You there?
Yeah, I'm listening.
Okay, so I'd fill up the Army stadium, football stadium, with the next round of recruits, the whole West Point Academy class. I'd have McCain be there, maybe you know, you delay a little bit, maybe push it to Veterans Day, and then announce General Petraeus for vice president.
You're right. He'd win by a landslide, but he's not going to do it. McCain is being sabotaged by his team. I've told you that for months. He's running to the left. He's not going to win if he keeps this up. He's giving the middle finger to the conservative base. He's going to pick a liberal as his running mate, as sure as I'm standing here. They're going to tell him to downplay his war record, downplay his connections to the military. And as a result, they're going to usher in the whirlwind. The whirlwind called Obama.
Savage.
I'd like to begin by extending my congratulations to both of the candidates for the nomination of the Democratic Party for President of the United States. And I'd like to congratulate Senator Hillary Clinton on the hard-fought campaign that she waged, for the hard work that she did throughout this campaign. And I know that as a father of three daughters, that Senator Clinton has inspired women all over America to believe that they can achieve the highest office of this nation.
Wrong, wrong, wrong speech, wrong time by the wrong man. Wrong. It's just wrong. Absolutely wrong. This middle-of-the-road vanilla candidate is finished. If this man does not change his campaign strategy, it's over. The election is over by a landslide for Obama. I'm going to tell you something. The country is very divided right now, and when you have two parties that are so similar, you can assure yourself of one thing: the American people are getting screwed. When both parties agree all the time on everything, there's only one party that's getting the shaft, and that's you, the taxpayer. Now, here's an update on the ultra-liberal state senator in Massachusetts who was accused in the sex case. This just came out minutes ago. Remember, state senator accused of attempting to grope one woman and of making lewd comments to another? He was just admitted to a hospital with an undisclosed illness hours after saying he would not seek re-election in the fall. James Marzilli's lawyers, Terrence Kennedy, refused to identify the hospital or his client's condition. Kennedy said, Senator Marzilli was admitted into a local hospital for treatment for an undisclosed illness this afternoon. Here it comes. This has been an extremely difficult time for his wife and family. The guy's running around grabbing women's crotches and breasts in the street. What does his wife and family have to do with this? The lawyer went on. He said, Marzilli's staff, quote, will continue to respond to the needs of constituents within the district until his term expires in January, the ultra-liberal Democrat said in a statement. Marzilli wrote that he and his wife, quote, ask for your continued good wishes and support during this very difficult time, close quote. You see, the ultra-liberal Democrat lawmaker was arrested Tuesday after a woman told police he approached her while she was sitting on a park bench and tried to grab her crotch. A second woman called authorities after seeing media coverage of Marzilli's arrest and said Marzilli made lewd comments to her. There's a lot more to this story. I don't want to read all of them. It's just unbelievable. Now, Marzilli of Arlington, Mass., pleaded not guilty Wednesday to charges including disorderly conduct, resisting arrest, assault and battery, and obstruction of justice. Kennedy, his lawyer, said his client, quote, completely and totally denies the charges. Okay, so a man is innocent until proven guilty. That's absolutely true. Yeah, sure. Okay, moving on. But the Mass lawmaker accused in sex case enters hospital because, as you well know, medical is sacred. That was developed by Big Chin Gigante. It was a technique developed by Big Chin Gigante, who walked around years, apparently, in a bathrobe, talking through his hand in his mother's bathroom. That's great. You know, an ancient Greek philosopher wrote that it's great to live in interesting times. And you've got to admit that we are living in very interesting times. Let's just hope they don't become very interesting and tragic times. San Francisco, Rick, you're on the Savage Nation. Topic, please.
Topic, I just wanted to say something, Mike. You know, periodically I hear you calling these far-left liberals progressives, and that's really their language. I really don't think...
Yeah, but you know I say it with sarcasm.
I think they're more like social conformists, because, I mean...
They are, absolutely. They are two legs bad, four legs good. Absolutely. They're right out of Animal Farm.
They are. are. I mean, if you can't get into a debate with them without them getting irritated and angry at you and almost hit you, and to call them progressive, what are they progressing towards? Disaster?
Well, lemmings are progressives, too, as they progress across the plateau over the cliff. You could call them progressives.
And I just, I don't know, to me, I just would prefer if you could create some...
Well, I know, but listen, Rick, when I say the word progressive, you understand I do it with, maybe I'm not doing it. Okay, from now on, I will do it in my patented method of putting an italic under italics underneath the word progressive. How's that? Does that work?
Sort of. I'd love it if you'd call them for what they are, though, which is conformist.
Yeah, but to just say liberal, or and sometimes I use the word progressive to mock them with their own word. All right, next case. Move on. I almost got a migraine. No, San Francisco, Jared, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hi, yes, Dr. Savage. Thanks for having me. Wanted to comment on the Seattle shooting. When I heard that, I was very disturbed. In fact, I heard it for the first time on your show and looked it up, did some research, decided to call, and I felt very strongly that this is an example to those who think, like the defendant in this case, that they might be inclined to do something of this sort. They might be inclined to go and enact some crazy madness like what happened there. When they see this, when they hear this, I think they're encouraged to do it. I think they say, oh, look at
this. Yes, you're talking about the Muslim who talked his way in through force by actually he kidnapped a young girl and made her open the outside door. That's kidnapping. He then went and said he wanted to kill Jews. That is a civil rights violation. That's a hate crime. He has not been charged for a hate crime because George Bush is too busy trying Marines on false charges. But the fact of the matter is he was just today found not guilty nor not innocent. In other words, a hung jury because of the slick lawyers that were given to him. And by the way, the lawyers probably work pro bono, incidentally, Jared.
Yeah, and you know what, also, like, I feel that it's as much fault as the judge. I think everyone in the whole chain in this situation is at fault equally. Not just the lawyers, not just the judge, but also the jurors. Everyone who even had a doubt in their mind as to what happened here and what should have happened.
How can you have a smoking gun, a dead woman, five shot women, and find the man have a mistrial? How is that possible?
If I were on that jury, let me just say I might have been going to jail myself for injuring somebody because I couldn't sit there and listen to somebody stammering on about
Hey, I have no comment on that. My emotions are extremely volatile to begin with. And if we live in a country where lawyers can get a murderer off on technicalities, then I have no faith in the judicial system whatsoever. I have more faith in a star chamber than I do in a jury. That's how I personally feel today, and I thank you for being as outraged as I am, and I know you're controlling your emotions. See, here's where a government should step in, and immediately the U.S. Justice Department declares it was a hate crime, we're going after this man on a federal civil rights violation, and throw the book at him. And instead of spending $6 to $10 million, actually it was $30 million, in a court martial against Lieutenant Colonel Chassani, they ought to spend $30 million in prosecuting Mr. Hawk in Seattle, so that other civil rights violators or potential civil rights violators understand they're going to lose. Why the government is not stepping in is a matter of political correctness, because they don't want to offend Muslims. They've been cowed by groups like CARE, in my opinion. Now, I want to tell you something. I'm facing a battle with CARE right now. Now, I'm not comparing CARE to this murderer, don't get me wrong, but I'm telling you right now, the tempo of that case, the judge in that case, the judge in my case, are the same. Mentally, they're all sympathetic to the other side. They would rather see the other side exonerated, as in this case with a smoking gun and a dead woman and five injured women, as they would rather see that than the other side get any justice. And you've got to understand that the cards are stacked against me. Now, I don't talk about it because if the case is still up there, the judge hasn't... Given her opinion, I can tell you what it's going to be already, though. That's my opinion. I can tell you right now where it's coming from and what it's going to be. I know what liberal judges do. But let's move on. I don't want to sit here and complain. Nancy in Washington, D.C., welcome to the Savage Nation.
Thank you. Michael, you commented on when Atlas Shrugged and Ayn Rand, and you inspired me to read the book. I'd started it twice before. I'm probably a quarter of the way through it now. And I would be interested in your comments as to the parallels for where we are politically and economically. what she discusses the rail system going from steel to an amalgam. And I'm looking at our energy policy. Now, we've known since OPEC that we need an alternative source of energy. And there have been hydrogen is available in the hydrogen cars that Toyota is making currently. So we know the technology has been available for at least 15 years, even in hydrogen. And I haven't finished the book, but I would appreciate your comments.
Well, what you're saying is, why are we still addicted to petroleum and petroleum-based fuels when we know there are alternatives that could have been developed rapidly over the last 15 or 20 years? The answer is because the cartel known as the oil industry has blocked the development of alternative energy by putting in politicians who are friendly to their industry.
And it seems to me that's very parallel to what Ayn Rand is writing about in the first quarter of the book.
Yeah, but eventually even the strongest cartel loses its grip. When the fuel becomes so expensive, eventually alternatives will become cost effective and they will be marketable. And that's what's going to happen. The marketplace will eventually determine the outcome. Now, why the government hasn't put more money into alternative energy development, I've been asking for 40 years, not just yesterday. This was an issue in the 1960s. But the other side has as much to blame as well. For example, we could be drilling off the coast of California. There's no reason we can't put oil platforms off the coast of California. I'm a boater. I'm a bigger environmentalist than these frauds who never go out on a boat and never hike a mountain. And I would be perfectly happy to see oil platforms off the coast of California if to deny the Arabs one more dime. I also would like to see the slope drilling in Anwar rather than give the Arabs another cent and let them blackmail us. But unfortunately, Saudi Arabia and their friends in the tents and the palaces own our political structure one way or the other. And I have no say whatsoever. Thank you, Nancy. I appreciate it. Sacramento, Rick, you're on the Savage Nation topic, please.
Yeah, Dr. Savage, I just wanted to talk a little bit about this thing I saw on the news today about Defense Secretary Robert Gates forcibly retiring or asking for the resignation of the chief of staff.
Yeah, it's a big story today that the chief of the Air Force got fired and so did the chief civilian representative of the Air Force. I was very curious about that. What do you suspect?
I don't really know what to suspect, although what really irritates me is you have your enlisted guys that are getting hung out to dry for things that they may or may not have done. But at the same time, you have a general who's almost certainly going to be retired and probably not prosecuted for things that he almost...
Oh, I see. Well, yeah, they claim that he was fired, that they're firing the Air Force chief because a B-52 was flown on a mission across America with fully loaded nuclear weapons, and the crew did not even know that the nuclear weapons were aboard the B-52. There was another scandal in the Air Force where fuses for nuclear weapons were sent to Taiwan by accident instead of fuses for something else. These are astounding mistakes, and so if they really happen, then that's really the reason I'm all for it. But what you're saying is, why should this Air Force general be given a full retirement with pension instead of being thrown into Leavenworth and denied his pension for that kind of screw-up, right?
Absolutely.
Well, you're asking a question for which there's an answer, which is that the rich get richer and the poor get you-know-what. Scranton, PA, Russ, you're on the Savage Nation.
Hello, Dr. Savage. It's an honor to talk to you.
Okay, thank you.
I wanted to say that I've been a Republican all my life, and I can't be a Republican anymore because this party has gotten so stupid. For instance, John McCain's strategy in duplicating what his opponent's strategy is and this change is so comedic that it's not even funny.
Yes, it's pathetic. He's become a mockery of a cartoon of himself. And of a failed party would do something like that. Instead of coming up with a fresh idea and using a campaign slogan such as, liberty, freedom, 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 liberty, defense, anything like that. Why is he stealing the slogan of the enemy camp? Because he has no ideas of his own. The party's out of ideas, Russ.
None. He has no imagination at all, or the people is working for him.
Well, the people know that. Russ, the people know that. I believe McCain is a very good man, an honorable man, but I think that he's been in business as a politician so long that he does not even know what he's doing or what he's saying. I think that they wheel him around and tell him, point him, and tell him what to say like most politicians. I don't think he has a vision of his own.
if you announce a new nationalist party this fall, I'll be the first one to sign up.
Well, I made a commitment and a promise on this show, but there was one caveat. I have to win my court battle against CAIR in order to endeavor, take on a new endeavor. I'm only one man. I could get 10,000 volunteers today. If I said to you, I want to create the new nationalist party, I could get over 10,000 volunteers. I could probably raise $10 million in a day. I'm not doing it. I'm not ready to do it. You have to be ready to do something and committed to it before you do it. Right now, I'm committed to the radio show, number one, and then I'm committed to winning my battle, my epic battle, for free speech against CAIR. Remember what I said to you. If they succeed in taking me off the radio, who's next? Who's next? Why, next, it's the people who won't lift a finger to help me. The leprechaun, the wall banger, the golfer. They think that this is a battle about Michael Savage. It's not. It's about free speech. And then after they got the leprechaun, the wall banger, and the golfer, they would go after liberals who dared stand up to them, as they did in Denmark. Remember, Denmark's a very liberal nation. And yet when they dared publish a cartoon that offended the radical Muslims amongst them, what happened? Why, the radical Muslims said, how dare you use freedom of the press to express yourselves? You can't do that. We are the government. We Muslims are the government. We determine what the government is. Because we were once, of course, just visitors to your country. But that was a long time ago, you fools. Now we are the country and you are our slaves. And as a result, even the Danish liberals are standing up to the radical Muslims. It's happening there, but it's not happening here. Here instead, we see continuous catering to radical Muslims. Continuous catering. For example, there's a very important story coming out of, I think it's Texas. Principal has new job after Islam 101 controversy. And that was about CAIR being invited into a junior high school to give brainwashing lessons on the values of Islam. This became a hot topic on a talk radio station in Houston, and afterwards it became a big, big story. But remember, two women with the Council on American-Islamic Relations went in and brainwashed the children. They're the same people who are trying to drive Michael Savage off the radio. Wake up tomorrow. It'll be you, you liberals. I'll be right back.
Savage.
It's the Savage Nation. Not yet the nihilist nation, but it may become so very soon. And I'd rather continue talking about wine, tomatoes, grapes, and garlic than McCain and Obama. Cincinnati, Brad, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Michael, oftentimes you make comments about people not listening to you. I just want to let you know that you don't know how many times you touch people with some of the simple things that you say. A while back, you talked about when you were a child. You said when you were when there was love in the family or love in your family, you didn't know you were poor.
That's
when
right.
You said that, when you said that to me, you said that to me, even though you said it to your 10 million listeners. And it really changed the way I viewed life. And as a result, I believe I'm a better father for it. So I just wanted to.
Oh, I hear what you're saying. Absolutely. So let's say you're a father struggling and you can't provide your children with the newest clothing or the best college. You know what? That isn't going to make a big difference in their life. What they're going to take with them through their whole life is the warmth and the guidance that you give them. The rest will either come to them or it won't. But all you have to do is look at Beverly Hills, and you'll see what wealth brings people. You know, take a look at the distorted faces on those people and their surgically altered bodies. They're dead inside, and they're seeking on the outside what they don't have on the inside. And it's true. It's 100% true, Brad. Poor children, if they have love, and they're fed and they're wearing clean clothing, they don't know whether they're poor or rich. I tell you, that's absolutely true to this day.
Thank you so much, Michael. It really hit home with me. And
well, I appreciate it because many people are. Look, there's so much we can talk about this. I remember when my kids were young, I had no money. I was struggling because of affirmative action. They wouldn't even give me a starting position. It was a terrible time. I got to tell you, I was as near cracking up as you ever could get. Because, you know, you have young kids and you see this and you see that and you want to give them this and you want to give them that. And they don't ask for it, but the parent wants to give it. And you just feel like you're failing them. And then you have to take a deep breath and you have to remember that The Bible doesn't say thou shalt go forth and be rich. Where is it written that you have to become a rich man? Show me where it says that to be a good man, you have to be a rich man. Now, there's nothing wrong if you are a rich man. But don't say that's the be-all and end-all of existence. When you have children, it's something other than that. Give them love. That's all they need.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
It is the Savage Nation. We're going to continue to take a slight break from the media, the government media complex double talk about the election, because there's so little difference between the parties at this point that I need a break from it, and I'm sure you do. I've had enough of this garbage, and I don't want to hear anymore. You know what? Let the election happen already, and then the people will speak instead of these jerks in the media telling us what's going on every breath they take. At the end of the last hour, a gentleman called, and he said, "You have no idea how you affect people." And you once told a story about the fact that when children are poor, if they have love in the family, they don't know they're poor. And we had a little conversation. I said, "You're 100% right." And, you know, I started to muse on it. So for whatever it's worth, I'm going to give you a little bit of homespun philosophy right now, in a minute anyway. Now, I've told you that the book I'm working on and have been working on is a collection of my stories, some of the childhood stories that you've come to love, such as The Fly and the Tuna, Fat Al's Tuna, oh, God knows, Dead Man's Pants. Now, some of these stories in some form have appeared in other books, but most of them have not. And I want to read you the titles of some of the stories that I'm going to put into my autobiography and then ask you a question. The first one is going to be The Fly and the Tuna, which none of these have been in any of the books. The Fly and the Tuna. I'm just looking. Tippy the Dog Who Would Let People In, Not Out, and How Our Immigration Policy Should Be. Let's see. Well, I'm just Savage's Childhood Diet, A Prescription for a Heart Attack. Let's see. The Electric Blue Saddle Stitched Pants. Symphony Sid Story and Growing Up in the Age of Radio. Now, I was editing this yesterday after the show. What I'm going to do is I'm going to show you what I'm doing here technique-wise. I guess I shouldn't do it, but it's a radio show, and the whole book is written solely for the radio audience. It's not going to a New York publisher. For a while, I thought it would. But once they started getting close to me, they started telling me what they wanted to do and what they were going to edit out and what they were going to edit in. And you know what? I don't want anyone telling me how to tell my own life story. And the technique I'm going to use, you're going to hear in a minute, is very close to what it sounds like verbally. In other words, let's say I take a transcript of the radio show, and then I take it verbatim and have it transcribed. Then I edit the verbal transcription of the story to make it sound better to look better for a written form. Well, there's a danger in that. It could lose the whole flavor of how you envision hearing me when you read the story. I have been editing these stories so that when you read the stories or read them to your children or sit by a fire one night with a glass of wine and remember it, you'll actually hear Michael Savage telling it to you. My voice will live through the stories. Now, no New York publisher would let me do that because the technique I'm using is rather, it's not novel. But it's unique to the kind of book that I'm writing. Let's put it to you that way. It's been done before, but not by anyone recently. So let me read you a short one, The Electric Blue Saddle Stitched Pants, as I edited it, okay? Here it goes. My mother bought me the most incredible pants. We didn't have a lot of money, but she knew I wanted those pants really bad. It was the Elvis era. So Mama Savage saved and bought me a pair of electric blue saddle stitched pants. I wore them to school. I thought I was Elvis himself. On the very first day, a bigger, older kid just happened to be wearing the same pants. And naturally, we got in a scuffle. He pushed me down, and my gorgeous Elvis pants were ripped in the knee. I thought it was the end of the world because those were the most expensive, beautiful pants I ever had in my life. So the rest of the day, I couldn't sit through the classes. Whatever the teacher said, my mind was somewhere else. My heart was pounding. How am I going to tell my mother? How am I going to tell my mother? So I come home with the pants, hiding the rip under the coat. Then I said, Ma, I ripped my pants. But she didn't get mad. She said, let me see them. Don't worry about it. I said, you're not going to tell Dad, are you? She said, no, don't worry about it. So all night I couldn't sleep. The next day the women are talking it over, sitting around the little table in that little house in Queens, and they're moving the crumbs around with their bread knives and talking. They decided what to do. They took the pants to a certain tailor, and the word came back. Don't worry, Michael, the pants can be weaved. Now, I didn't know what pants can be weaved meant. I don't think they do that anymore because clothing has become something different than it was then. We throw everything away now. But I knew from that moment on that everything would be good. And it was. The pants were weaved. That's what a mother's for, I guess. To fix everything but a broken heart. Now, that's the whole story. Now, you could take that one story and you can make it into something bigger. You can add words to it. You can add details to it. But I've given you the jewel, the Persian miniature version. So that's what I'm going to do with this book. Do you like it so far? Here's another one. I'm going to blow through the break, babe. We're just going to do this for two segments now. Savage liked art in grade school and hubris. Here's another little story, sorry. Savage liked art in grade school. That's the title of the whole story. And it goes like this. It's another shorty. I'll never forget a prize I won in the third or fourth grade in the Bronx. In between fending off the blows of the fellow students and having my lunch stolen and protecting my shoes and clothing, we actually learned something. One of the things we did was paint. That was a lot of fun. It was sort of a violent jail for young children, it was, PS 48. I remember getting into George Washington. It was the first picture I ever did. The teacher said, pick any topic you like. So I picked George Washington crossing the river at Trenton at the front of his boat. I remember getting into the swirls of the water. I just got into it. I lost myself with the waves and the boat. When I finished the painting, she said, this is very good, young savage. Then they made me go around the whole school with it. I was embarrassed. I was ashamed because I was not yet in talk radio. Today, of course, what you do is take the smallest thing you do and make it into the biggest thing. In those days, or at that time, you took the biggest thing you did, and it was always the smallest thing because you're a child without any hubris. But as an adult, you need hubris to survive. Without it, you're just a penniless, helpless worm. End of story. So there's small stories in some cases and big in others. Do you like it, or do you want embroidery? Do you want more about it? How about Fat Al's tuna, the two faces of England? Fat Al's tuna, now that's a recipe. When I was a boy working as a busboy in the Shanks Paramount Hotel, I saw how tuna was really made. Fat Al was a 350-pounder. When he made a tuna in a tureen, he didn't use a mixmaster. He used his hairy forearm. He had a cigarette dangling from the right side of his mouth, and the kitchen was banging and bustling. The hotel guests are in the dining room eating the fourth meal of the day. To mix a tuna, he would throw in huge cans of tuna, and then he'd throw in vats of mayonnaise. But the guy stirred it with his arm. He'd roll up his undershirt. You see, you've got to visualize this. Fat Al would lean over the tureen with the arm, the big giant Italian arm full of hair. His arm was mayonnaise thick up to his armpit. He's got the arm moving around. He'd say, see, kid, you keep moving it until you've got a nice creamy consistency. Meanwhile, he's got ashes falling off his cigarette. I guess that helped the taste of the tuna because the people never complained. They loved it. Now, that's a tuna. There's a proper tuna with a little sweat and arm hair. Now, that is a good tuna fish recipe. Other than that, I don't want to talk about recipes. Here's a story on, now this is in the same story. Here's a story on the two faces of England in an article that caught my eye. It said, Englishmen apt to denounce their country as being sick and depraved, close quote. According to the German magazine, people are saying, our island is now filled with brawling drunks, overflowing prisons, truancy, late trains, and racists, and our only heroes are philandering footballers. We have become a nation ill at ease with ourselves, close quote. It sounds like America. But we could say, now filled with brawling drunks, overflowing prisons, truancy, late trains, and racists. The only thing missing from that list are phony liberals. Quote, our only heroes are philandering footballers. So we could substitute philandering basketball players. We've become a nation ill at ease with ourselves. Yet in the same week, a new guidebook paints Britain as an idyllic country where everything stops for afternoon tea, complete with cucumber sandwiches and crumpets, delicious fruitcakes and jam sponges. Everyone wears tweeds in the country, and the trains generally run on time. Close quote. The only problem with the English is they can't speak the language properly. That's the one problem with them. They never kept up with the times. They kept a brittle, older language that doesn't really resemble the English that I know. It doesn't work for them anymore. That's why they're shriveling as a nation. You name one British talk show host that sells in the world. No, not anymore. People don't like that. The British accent was hot in the 60s. Everyone hired a chick that had a British accent because all the Jewish guys in the garment center particularly got hot for that. You know what I mean? Yeah, Mr. Katz is not here. They always hired them in the garment center. That's who they hired, but that's over with. Now they want a Puerto Rican or a Mexican. If you got someone who speaks that kind of parochial English, the English language itself, if you got someone who speaks that kind of immigrant English, it's more appealing in a certain way, very in your face. No one wants that proper English accent. That's over. In the 60s, sure, right through the late 50s and early 60s, Twiggy, the Beatles, the Aston Martin, the whole thing was very cool. But then the English thing died. With the breakdown of the nation because of floods of immigrants, with the welfare system, England is not England anymore, but what is? I'll be right back. It's the Savage Nation. Savage. Jumping with my boy Mike in the nation. My boy Mike in the nation. With my boy Mike in the nation. With my boy Mike in the nation. So that's the theme song from a disc jockey from the, I don't know, when I was a kid, Symphony Sid. This guy had the sound and the voice. And since I'm reading some stories from my forthcoming autobiography, and I'm not here to sell it to you. Believe me, it's not ready to sell. I know you're shocked that you're hearing something that and it's not for sale on a talk radio show. But it will be. When it's ready, it's ready. It's not ready yet. I don't know when it'll be ready. I want it to be ready around the time of the election. I'm going to put it on my website as soon as it's ready, but it's not ready. It might get delayed because I'm not letting this out because this could be the last book I write. And I'm not doing a political book. You know, people said to me, hey, it's an election year. You could sell hundreds of thousands of books attacking liberalism if Obama wins. I said, I know I could. There's going to be dozens of books like that. They're probably writing them already, just waiting to slip in the words. I said, let someone else do it and make some money. I don't care. I'm going to tell my story my way because that's, I think, what people want. It's the one thing I haven't done yet. And so here's another one. This is another story called Symphony Sid's Story and Growing Up in the Age of Radio. And here's how it goes. Play Symphony Sid for 1 minute, just to set the mood again, because I talked. Okay, so here's how the story goes. Play another song for me, because I'll sing a little and I will talk a little. That's all I'm going to do today. Now, hold on right here. You see, that line came off a transcript from the radio show, an earlier radio show, and I could have taken it out for the written form. That's what I was getting at. I could have started it as a written story. But instead it starts like this. Play another song for me because I'll sing a little and I will talk a little. That's all I'm going to do today. Now, the reason I'm leaving that in there is because my audience, when they read that sentence, they're going to visualize me talking to them on the show. Okay, so that's how the book's going to be written. I can guarantee you if this went through the normal mill, the sausage mill called New York Publishing, that sentence would come out. And it wouldn't be a sausage anymore. It would be some ersatz sanitized air-conditioned nightmare. I don't want to produce an air-conditioned nightmare. I want to produce something gritty and real. So I'll do it again. So I go and I say, okay, stop the music. Wait, I've got to hear this again. This is one of my favorite pieces of music. We had these guys dig it. We had these guys. Okay. This is Symphony Sid, the theme song of Symphony Sid, who was a great disc jockey in the 50s. You've got to understand what I'm talking about. This guy was the night voice of America. We had a lot of American jazz in New York City. You'd be coming home at 2 to 3 o'clock in the morning, whenever, and there was Symphony Sid with his gravelly, smoker, scotchy voice, and you were on the way home and you knew the world was right. Tell me who plays a saxophone like that today. Nobody. And he had a laugh on him. When this guy laughed, the world was okay. I don't care how bad your day was. I'm very lucky. I grew up in the age of radio. I don't know if you know this. I don't want to talk about nostalgia. I'll sound like an old fart, and I'm not. but I did grow up in the age of radio. I'm very lucky. There was someone who wrote an article recently who said that some of the great people in radio today grew up in the age of radio. I grew up on my father's knee listening to the radio. To this day, I can still smell the secondhand smoke I got from Dad's Philip Morris. Morris's. If what's true about secondhand smoke, which of course it isn't, I should have been dead at age 11. I can still see his yellow nicotine-stained fingers with me dozing off next to him, listening to the Green Hornet. You had to use your mind listening to the radio plays. Today it's all spoon-fed. You don't have to use your mind anymore. So it's left to guys in the radio business to say it like it is. When I play Symphony Sid on my show, here's the memory chip. Silver Cup Bread. Silver Cup Bread Factory over the 59th Street Bridge. 3 a.m, coming home from the Latin dance club, smoke coming out of the Silver Cup Bakery, going down the Long Island Expressway, another 8 minutes to home. It was cold, it was late, got to be at school or work the next day. That's it, the whole piece, play Symphony Sid. Just play Symphony Sid. Now I'm going to go to the callers. Jason in Portland, Oregon, welcome to the Savage Nation. What's on your mind tonight?
Hello, Dr. Savage, and thank you for not bending to the wills of the New York group and just telling it like it is.
Okay. So is this something you want to, is this something you would buy and why?
Oh, absolutely. Now, I've got two daughters, one 12, one 11, and my goal, if I achieve anything as a father, is to teach them to stand up for themselves and just tell it like it is.
Well, yeah, but telling it like it is has to be done with a modicum of judiciousness, because you can't always tell it like it is in every situation, and you can't always tell all of like it is, and particularly if you're a school child where the teachers have all the power over them. So you have to sort of teach them how to judiciously know the truth and sometimes hold their own peace.
Yes, that's a choice, you know, that I can help them make, but I've always felt that if I give them the raw, you know, I give them the best information.
Yeah, if you got to teach them how to decide things for themselves and how to know what the truth is, but sometimes you got to hold the truth to yourself. There are times it can be suicidal to tell them the truth, you know, as you can well understand. I don't have to spell it out for you. We have a mob madness running through this country today where if you don't worship Obama, you're considered a racist, and you can get yourself killed in the wrong areas of Marin County where they hate guns and violence. They can become violent and shoot you with a Derringer. An old lady, a little old liberal lady, could pull out a two-shot Derringer and kill you if you tell them the truth about Obama's Marxist friends. So it's one thing to know the truth. God sees the truth but waits. So copy God.
Savage.
All right, so that those are going to be my stories, like, you know, the ripped pants, the saddle stitch pants, but it could be rewritten almost like a modern Aesop's Fables. What if we had a modern Aesop's Fables? The pants were woven of the finest silk. They shone as though they were woven by the prophet himself, praise be he. And then I went to the madrasas. The other boys were playing kick the infidel. When I arrived, they were kicking an infidel all about the courtyard. So I joined in my fine silk pants. And the nerve of the infidel, he reached up and grabbed my fine silk pants as I was kicking him in the head with the other boys. And he caused me to fall to the ground and tear my pants. Well, that evening I went home to mother. No, it's not going to be Aesop's Fables. It's going to be Savage Stories. Sacramento Frank, welcome to the Savage Nation. What's on your mind?
Hey, Mike, I love the pants story. Just wondering how many times your mom saved your life from your father killing you.
My father never threatened to kill me.
Well, sometimes mom saved our bacon there when we got on the wrong side of dad.
You know, it's an interesting question, though, Frank, because the stereotype is that the father is mean and the mother is the protector. But I once did a whole show of mean mothers because it's a hidden fact that there's a lot of mean mothers out there. I had calls for an hour that you'd never believe. I can remember them to this day, guys beaten with cords and sticks by mothers, and from all ethnicities, by the way. all ethnicities. Guys told me their mothers beat the heck out of them. One with, I never forget, there was a Navajo Indian called from Arizona who said his mom beat him with an electric cord and beat the other kids. And I mean, I had amazing calls about mean mothers, Frank.
My mom was the savior, and my dad was the one that beat the heck out of us. My brother.
No, it wasn't like that in my house. Let's see when you think. No, my father wasn't a beater. He was a controller, as fathers should be. But he did it verbally, and he didn't have to, you know, resort to the physical side to get his way. Let's put it to you that way, Frank. Thank you for the call. 1-800-449-8255 phone number. North Carolina, Ed, you're on the Savage Nation. Topic, please.
Yes. Again, about the family, Dr. Savage, thank you for your show. I'm a longtime listener, first-time caller.
Well, you know, let me pause again. I want to show the people listening to the show the reach of a simple family story, how it can touch a man in North Carolina, another man in Washington, because this is a universal truth. These are universal stories.
I was the ninth kid of nine. I was ninth of nine kids. Grew up in a home in the 60s and 70s in Miami, and as many kids as we had, my father made it a point to be a part of every part of my life that he could. He was my baseball coach growing up. He was my pitching coach. I'd come off the field between innings. He would massage my arm. Those are the things. He's in heaven now. He's with Jesus, but he left a legacy for me that I had passed on to my two sons, who are now, one's in the military, he's in boot camp right now, and the other one is a middle school teacher, and I have a granddaughter, and so I'm hoping.
So you've been blessed because of the kindness and warmth and love of this poor man called your father.
Yes, sir. He worked every day, all day. We had nothing. Materially, we had nothing. I drove, if I got to drive to school when I was in high school, I drove a lime green Pinto that my sister gave me. It was a pitiful car.
Well, my first car was a green 1957 Oldsmobile two-door salesman's car that to this day, and I have some very fancy machines and I love them all in a certain way, but there's no love I remember for a car more than that 1957 Oldsmobile. I remember the first night my dad brought it home for me. First car now. I looked out of the window of our little house, and there it was in the rain, and I went and sat in that car in the rain in the street for hours, just watching the raindrops on the windshield, because that was the greatest car I ever owned to this day.
Wow. Well, I don't know that my Pinto was the greatest car, but it was the first one, and I remember getting in it. It had a little AM radio in it, and I drove for hours just thinking, I can't believe I actually have a car. I was 17, and I finally was able to get a car. But I think there's...
But that goes to the point of the story, doesn't it? Here you are, first car. Did it matter what it was as long as it ran? No, because you loved it. And it's the same with your father. Did you really judge your father as to whether or not he was a wealthy man? I kind of doubt it.
Never.
I doubt it. I mean, if this man was so dedicated to you that he was at your baseball games and rubbed your arms after a game, I'm sure that's all you thought about was how much he loved you.
When I was at his funeral, the thing that hit me the most... And that the thing that jarred my heart the most was the fact that my dad was there for me, that he was there in my victories. He was there when my wife and I got married. He made sure that we had our first deposit. He helped, and he had nothing. He was just a man that just made it by. But he made sure that we knew that he was there for us. And that was the greatest gift he could have ever given me, and that's the gift I gave my children, is that I was there for them. I was their coach. I went to their ball games. I went to their special events when they had things at school. We made sure we're involved in their lives. And I think the greatest gift that a dad or a mom can give their kid is themselves.
Ed, it's a beautiful story and it's very touching, and I'm sure you've touched millions of people tonight with that story of your father. May he rest in peace.
Yes, sir.
That's it. You know, certain things you can't talk about, then you get choked up thinking about it, because that's the way of all flesh, you know. The way of all flesh. So let's see if I had the electric blue saddle-stitched pants. I'm trying to find one that will match the tenor of that story, and I don't know that I have one that will fit. Well, here's one, Barney the Undertaker. Oh, now, I don't know if I can tell this story. I'm going to read it cold. I haven't re-edited this. This is right off the tape before I've re-edited it, so it may jump around a little bit. Life has been good to me. I've had my share, as Barney the Undertaker has said to me. At the end of his life, did I ever tell you about Barney the Undertaker? I hope his family is not listening. I told you about Charlie, didn't I? Charlie, the old man who was dying of cancer years later. As he was dying in severe pain, as the girls went by in the market and he was moaning from cancer, but he still wore a neat little suit, tie, jacket, and his eyes through the slits because they were closed in pain. As the pretty girls walked by, he'd say, "Oh, Mickey." A pretty girl would walk by and he'd say, I've got to put it in a family way. I've got to change it a little bit because I grew up around men who were from. They spoke a little on the vulgar side, even though I was a kid. They didn't check a dictionary. He said to me, "I'd like to make love to her once more," as the woman went by. And I would say, "Charlie, you made love to her?" The strange, beautiful woman passing by. He said, "No, Mickey, once more I'd like to make love to her." He turned the words around. This was a guy dying of cancer. Although he was poor, he considered himself a ladies' man. He wore cologne. He wore a suit. In his little dingy market next door, there was an undertaker guy, a dapper little fellow who chauffeured the undertakers around, the funeral cars around. So years later, when I was 14, I asked him about women, and I said, "Do you monkey around or something like that?" He said, "No, Mickey, I had my share." Now, that was dignified that a man would say, "I had my share," was an amazing thing for me to hear, because most guys pretend that they're in heat 24/7. They make believe they're ready to rut like a rooster in a barnyard, that every woman is fair game. You know, that's how guys put on the act. In reality, most men really aren't like that. It's very unnatural to be in heat 24/7. But this undertaker, this little guy, was dignified. He said, "No, Mickey, I had my share." That was the most dignified thing a man ever said to me. Now, that's a story. I mean, it's short. But I look at it myself. They're worthy of telling. They're worthy of telling because they're unique. And believe me, I don't have a fat, ugly guy who writes them for me. Robert, Palm Springs, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Mike, I think you're onto something. I think these stories are so... They're actually exciting to me because I used to live in New York, but I was a transplant from California. And I listened to you, and I just the images that are going through my head are amazing. I'm so sick of hearing about the liberal formerly known as Hussein, and I just want...
Robert, we're all sick of it. Now, here's the thing. The primaries are over. This should be stopped now. And if we had a sane media that knew what it was doing, they would leave it alone until around September. And then they would run a little bit more and more until the election. And then a little bit after the election. But they're talking to themselves. That's all the media is doing, is getting excited for each other. And frankly, the people are tuning out. I don't want to do it anymore.
Well, I'm excited about the book. I think it's going to be like, I read The Catcher in the Rye, and it just seems like you've got these stories.
Wow. Now, you know, you're making, if I could ever get anywhere near Salinger, I would have become Babe Ruth. No, it's interesting that when you say it like that, even these disconnected stories, if they're woven together properly, will become a whole.
Oh, yes. Yes, absolutely.
But you see, they're uniquely mine. Robert, they're my stories. No one can rip them off. No one could hear me do this on the radio and steal it before I publish it, or I wouldn't be doing it. No one can steal something original. That's the beauty of it, Robert.
They couldn't do it. They demolish it. They couldn't capture it.
Yeah, I've seen my stuff appear on comedy shows and all. That's to be expected, but that's not what I'm talking about. Down to the personal story like this, it's got to be me telling it. Anyway, I hope you're around when the book comes out so you can get a copy. I really do. Thanks for the call. Let's go to Jerry in Chicago. Jerry, you're up on the Savage Nation. What's on your mind this evening?
What a nice segue. I'm going to throw another author at you, and I'm certainly not comparing you to him because he was a degenerate and an alcoholic. His name was Charles Bukowski. But he spoke of a...
No, I know him very, very well because I once had a friend who was a big friend of his when he was a kid. And then I helped this friend get the biography of Bukowski published by a major publisher. And the friend then thought he was a famous literary figure. He's never published anything since. And he and I broke away from each other. You know, I got to tell you about Bukowski. I read a lot of Bukowski because my friend was enamored of his writing. I thought he was a superb storyteller. Now, he was a drunk. Remember the movie Barfly that was played by Mickey Rourke? And who was the female lead opposite him? Do you remember? Faye Dunaway, I think?
No, Mike, he was...
Well, that was based on Bukowski's life. Here was the thing about it. As I got a little more mature and looked at Bukowski's work, I said, you know, this guy is amazing. He was a stone-out alcoholic. And he could write a description of a drunk navigating across the floor of an apartment and what he felt and what he saw, unlike anyone I had ever read in his ability to describe things. But then I said, so what? Who cares what a drunk sees and feels? And ultimately, there was nothing there except the drunk and what he saw and felt. That's why I didn't care much about him.
Michael, but I see that quality in you in sort of talking about a different life with a sense of honesty. So granted, not comparison, but I see the same type of...
If I could have the same eye in detail for detail without boring the listener and taking him through every excruciating emotion as I walk across a 10-foot living room, and have a story which has redeeming value, as I just did with Barney the Undertaker, where when I'm 14 and I say to the guy, you know, do you monkey around? And he says to me in a dignified fashion, remember, he's just a poor driver in a funeral home, and he says to me, I've had my share. And I say at the end of the story, he was the most dignified man I've ever met. Now, that's a story that has dignity to it and a lesson that's worth telling.
Fans in the Midwest, so we enjoy you on a regular basis here.
Oh, thank God. See, so we got east, south, you know, north. And that's the beauty. If you tell a story or you tell the truth, I think that there's no regionality to it. The truth is the truth is the truth. And a keen observation is a keen observation whether you're in Kansas or in New York City. The only place it doesn't work is in San Francisco because they're all drugged up. That's not true either. That's a joke. And it's a bad one. I was sitting the other day outside a restaurant in North Beach on Sunday. I rarely, if ever, do this on a Sunday. In fact, I never do. But my boat's been tied up in the yard waiting for a part to come from Malaysia, so I don't go out on the boat. So I go into North Beach. It's an interesting little side story. It's not as good as as Barney the Undertaker. God, I remember those Cadillacs. There was an Undertaker. The same guy showed me my first corpse down there, too. It was interesting. That, you know, I didn't put that in the book. I must have been the same age. Hot day, July, Coca-Cola, icebox, outside, grocery store. They call them bodegas. Then they became clubs. You fished in the bottom of the Coca-Cola box. They had ice in it that turned to water. And your arm turned blue as you fished around for a soda. That kind of day. And the Undertaker's there. My father was busy working in the back of his little shop making a lamp or cleaning. I don't know what he was doing. He wired a lot of statues into lamps. And he was busy doing that. Hot day, I'm outside, so I ask him what's going on in the mortuary down there. You know, it was a funeral parlor, but they performed embalming. They did embalming. So he said, well, would you like to see what goes on? I said, okay, sure. So get in the elevator, and it was one of those elevators like in lofts where you pull a big cord from the top like a Godfather elevator they move cars on. And to this day, I can hear the hum of that elevator, the motor. And I'm going down this huge car elevator into the basement, the subterranean depths of a funeral parlor. We get down there, walk into the and there's a doctor performing an autopsy. No, it wasn't an autopsy. Sorry, this was the embalming story. And okay, that's it. So there it is. Now I come back up in the street. Must have been a half an hour later. My father's in the undershirt outside the store, and he's looking for me. Hey, Michael, where? And he turns and he sees me, and when his eyes caught my eyes, he saw I was a changed person. And that's my Undertaker story. I'll be right back.
Savage.
As the drive hits the deep right field, that ball is going, it is gone. Hitting his second homer of the day. And the Yankees' sixth homer.
And there is the nostalgia setup, the Mel Allen voice, one of the greatest voices radio has ever heard, and one of the earliest radio voices that I came to love. And here I am, sitting in front of a microphone with a radio voice that millions love. And I'm going to close the hour out now with another story that will be in my autobiography. And it's called My First Embalming, since we talked about The Undertaker, and here it is. I was now a late teenager, and I had gone to Europe, big trip to Europe. You know, hippie, beatnik trip to Europe, see the museums, blah, 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 came back on a ship. I come back from Europe, and I thought I had become a little off base. was a little kind of teenage angst, little nuts. So I took a job in a mortuary at Queens General Hospital. I can remember it to this day. Red brick, big smokestack, looked like a crematorium. And I go in there as an assistant to just basically mop up and sweep up in a mortuary. And I had never seen an embalming. I don't know why I took that job of all jobs. It was like a bizarre choice to begin with. I guess it proves I was a little off-base after going to Europe. But then again, I wouldn't be the first nor the last person to come back from Europe and think they were a little crazy. Just take a look at Europe. So I go down into the thing, and the guy gives me an apron and a mop. And he says, "Just basically, your job is to mop up the floor." But meanwhile, I'm watching the autopsies. This was not this is really my first autopsy, not my first embalming. It's my first autopsy. So I watched a doctor. Now, here's a doctor with a medical degree. He was a medical examiner performing an autopsy. He has a cigar in his mouth, which I thought was weird and kind of disrespectful to the dead. The guy is chomping on a cigar. He cuts open a dead woman's head, like the top of her head, to pull back the skull cap and to remove the brains for, you know, that's what an autopsy is you examine the organs. And I'll never forget it as long as I lived. She happened to have been an African-American lady and a large woman, and he was pulling and pulling and pulling, and the skull wouldn't pull off. And he puts his foot up against the gurney that she's on, or the stainless steel thing, and pulling and cursing and the cigar, and I'm mopping, the kid in the room there. I couldn't believe what I'm watching. And finally, he curses, and there it comes out, and that's it. So now then I see another man. Man must have been 50, 55, white man in good shape, just slim, gray-haired, but not old-looking, dead. And he was completely naked, as you would expect, on a slab. And the kid's mopping, and I look very carefully at the corpse. And I noticed some semen on his thigh, which again was novel and unique, because I didn't understand much about death at that time, as much as I since learned. And then there was a young child, 2 or 3 years old, as beautiful as a doll. Blonde hair, blue eyes, like a doll. Still and dead. For no reason. Still and dead for no reason. I quit the next day and threw in my mop. And that was my first and last autopsy.
Savage.